A flare-up in fighting around Europe's largest nuclear power plant is fueling fears of possible nuclear disaster. Russia and Ukraine blame each other for the shelling near Zaporizhzhia. How much of a risk does the conflict pose, and can a catastrophe be avoided? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. Concerns of a disaster at Europe's largest nuclear facility are growing. Shelling has intensified around the Russian-controlled Zaporizhzhia power plant in Ukraine. Moscow and Kyiv blame each other for the attacks. Russia controls the facility, but Ukraine is operating it. Vladimir Putin has agreed to grant access to inspectors from the UN Atomic Watchdog. The Kremlin made the announcement after a phone call between President Putin and French President Emmanuel Macron. In a statement, it said both leaders noted the importance of sending an IAEA mission to the plant as soon as possible to allow experts to assess the situation on the ground. The Russian side confirmed its readiness to provide the necessary assistance to the agency's inspectors. Well, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has welcomed the inspection, but says specific details still need to be worked out.
The return of comprehensive security to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant and Inner Hodor may start with this mission. I'm grateful to all who joined the effort. If the Russian radiation blackmail will go on, the summer may enter the history of Europe as one of the most tragic of all time, because in no rule book, in any station in the world, there's a procedure in case some terrorist state turns a nuclear power plant into a target.
Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has again called for the demilitarization of the plant.
I remain gravely concerned about the unfolding situation in and around Europe's largest nuclear power plant in Zaporizhzhia. Common sense must prevail to avoid any actions that might endanger the physical integrity, safety or security of the nuclear plant. And the facility must not be used as part of any military operation. Instead, agreement is urgently needed to establish Zaporizhzhia as purely civilian infrastructure and to ensure the safety of the area.
We'll bring in our panel in just a moment. First, let's take a closer look at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant. It was one of the first sites seized when Russia invaded Ukraine in February. The plant may be under Russian control, but Ukrainian engineers still operate it. Atomic energy researchers have warned of a meltdown or radiation leak if power supplies are damaged by shelling. And the UN watchdog has warned fighting around the facility poses a very real risk of nuclear disaster. Let's bring in our guests now. And from Moscow, Andrei Fedorov, former Deputy Foreign Minister of Russia. From Odessa, Hanna Shelest, Security Studies Programme Director at the Ukrainian PRISM think tank. And from Vienna, Robert Kelly, a former Director of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Thank you all very much for being here with us today. Andrei, let's start with you, because we heard there the Ukrainian president accusing Russia of radiation blackmail. Let's give you a chance to respond to that.
Okay. This is the question that the future of this nuclear power station is very important for the whole situation in Europe and not only for Russia and Ukraine. The question is who will be responsible if something will happen, because the risk that there might be a nuclear pollution is still very high, and both sides are really accusing each other in this situation.
And Ukraine is very firmly blaming you. What are you saying? What is Moscow saying about this?
Moscow is saying that it's not possible because there are no heavy arms, and the shelling is coming from the other side of the area, from Nikopol, which is under Ukrainian control. And this is the task of Moscow to bring inspection and to show and to try to confirm the whole world that it's Ukraine which is responsible for this dangerous situation.
Okay, Hannah, your response to that. Is Ukraine shelling the area? Is it the one responsible for the dangerous situation?
You know, the problem is that Russian accusations are happening without any proofs. And let's remember that first and foremost, the Russian forces must not be at the territory of the nuclear plant. And already for 1 month, we have the personnel, more than 500 people, and more than 50 equipment at the territory of the nuclear plant, including those that are inside of the building, inside of the engine rooms number 1 and 2. We have quite a number of satellite images proving this. We have the latest video that appeared 2 days ago from inside showing these cars. That is the total violation of the all safety regulations about the nuclear facilities. So that should be number one, what these forces are doing inside of the nuclear plant, making it de facto a big explosive facility. The second is we had back in June, it's only now international journalists started to pay attention to the problem. But Ukrainian state attracted attention of the international organizations back in June because there were quite a number of videos from the security cameras proved when Russians tried to occupy this nuclear facility, how first they were shelling it. As for now, we also have quite a number of videos, and by the professionals can really identify from which side, first of all, this shelling is happening. And the second is it's very easy to do according to the time difference between the first explosion and the second, meaning it is like from the start of the ammunition and the targeting. And all the military experts, as for now, are saying that it would be impossible to shell from Nikopol and to have this short period of time. Definitely it is happening just around.
Okay. Hannah, I just want to ask that if this site is so sensitive, which it clearly is, it's Europe's biggest nuclear power plant, why was it not better protected in the first place against a Russian takeover?
One of the reasons exactly was because Ukrainian armed forces tried not to fight around it, understanding the risks. So we assumed that the nuclear power plant will be the non-touched territory. That's why, first of all, at that time, you need to remember that we had fightings all around approximately 2,000 kilometers of the front. So we couldn't just put the personnel around for security, and we couldn't bring the heavy weapons there. Otherwise, we would have the fightings that would jeopardize the safety of these facilities. At that time, we had the fightings around Mariupol and in many other places, very important. So here it was, unfortunately, balance or necessity between the nuclear safety or the possibility to defend this facility.
Andrei, I mean, it does seem very clear, doesn't it, that the threat does come from the simple fact that Russian forces are somewhere where they shouldn't be, where they don't belong.
So the Russian forces occupied the territory of the nuclear power station already on February 28, taking into consideration the importance of this power plant also for the territories which is now under Russian control. And one of the elements of this battle around this Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is that if it will be cut off, nearly the whole territory, which is now under Russian control, many things simply impossible there. It's not the power plant itself, it's quite well protected, I mean reactors. The problem is nuclear waste storage, which is not protected enough, and which includes many radioactive materials, including plutonium-240, which is very dangerous.
Okay. Bob, let's bring you in at this stage, because we've got both sides blaming each other for the threat at this nuclear power plant. What is the actual threat that exists there?
The actual threat is much, much less than all these politicians and diplomats are putting out there. This is a huge plant with a very great safety record. It's been run for decades. It's probably as safe today as it ever was, although they're losing some of the redundant backup systems that are keeping it as safe as it would be. But as people are arguing about, you know, these details of waste storage and things like that, they're missing the big picture totally. If you compare this plant, let's say, and I liked your lead-in, mentioned Meltdown, Fukushima, there were about 3,000 people died, and that counts the people who were injured in traffic accidents, chasing their dogs, leaving the site and all. 20,000 died in the tsunami. If you look at 3,000 people potentially dying of a meltdown at Fukushima, at Zaporizhia, that's unfortunate. But the idea that it's going to contaminate all of Western Europe makes you laugh. I mean, this is such a stupid claim. The people making these claims are either ignorant or totally political or both. And I suspect it's both.
Mm. Hannah, what do you make of that? That the threat, the claim of the threat is over-exaggerated in this situation?
No, the question is that we are definitely talking about several possibilities of what is happening there. Nuclear waste, about which just we talked about, it is 170 containers, it is one. We also have the problem of the radiated waters over there. And also because it is near the river, it can have much bigger effect. But don't forget about the explosions that we have inside of the engines. Definitely, just shelling from outside will not make the second Chernobyl, because the Zaporizhia power plant being built with the better security compared to what we had in Chernobyl. However, if you blow up from inside, and that is the possibility, because we heard, unfortunately, such threats, plus we have a lot of mines around the territory at the perimeter. So it can be the accident. Even we need to understand that it shouldn't be the intentional act of terrorism. It can be just an accident because of the irregulations or because of the neglecting of the safety measures. And we saw it in Chernobyl in February and March, and we see it right now, what is happening at the territory. Any type of the accident, unfortunately, we cannot predict. And if possible, one very small correction to what being said by my Russian colleague about the energy provision and importance of Zaporizhia. The situation is that the Russian representative of the energy company for the last few weeks been trying to disconnect Zaporizhia power plant from producing and delivering the energy to the uncontrolled territories of Kherson, for example, region, with only a goal to reconnect it to the Crimea grid. So just stealing the energy produced by the Ukrainian power plant. So we need to understand that Russians are using current situation in Zaporizhia both for the nuclear terrorism and blackmailing, but also for the satisfaction of the necessity of what they need for Crimea.
Andrei, do you agree with that claim by Hannah that Russia is planning to shut down the plant, to reconnect it and re-divert or divert all the electricity, all the power to Crimea and to Russian-controlled territory, thereby shutting off vast swathes of Ukraine from the energy?
As I mentioned before, without this power plant, Russian-controlled territories will be without electricity. And for Russian government and for President Putin, it's a very key issue, the vital issue. That's why there is so many noise around this nuclear power plant. And at the same time, of course, I cannot exclude that if Russia will continue to control Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, it can be cut off from Ukrainian electricity
But if I could just jump in, because the U.S. Secretary General just in the last few days said that this energy created by this power plant is Ukrainian energy.
Yes, it's Ukrainian energy, but of course, in this very situation, it's used by Russia, and part of it goes to Ukraine, part of it goes to Russian-controlled territories. But as I said, it's much more at this stage a political issue than just a technical issue, because what Russia is afraid of, frankly speaking, is to lose control over this nuclear power plant. It's very important for the survival of the territories where Russia is now under control, which are under control of Russia.
Robert Kelly, how, if we do go back to the technicalities of it, how easy is it possible for Russia to shut down a nuclear power plant and divert the electricity it produces, the energy it produces, to a different area? How difficult is that to do?
The first part of your question is it's trivial to shut down a nuclear power plant. I think that four of the units are down right now. And since Russia built these plants, many of them in other places as well as here, they know exactly how to do it, and so do Ukrainians. Mm. There's decades of experience. As far as disconnecting it from the grid, I've talked about this for the last week. There's been a lot going on outside the plant, including hundreds of kilometers away of blowing up substations and power lines. In that sense, Ukraine is winning the battle, because what they're doing is they're isolating the plant. The plant can't send electricity to anybody right now. It has to be shut down, and it's become a $40 billion white elephant that both sides want. Both want it after the war, and they want it to be safe.
Hannah, we've just had President Putin agree access to the IAEA to assess the plant, to monitor the plant. Of course, there are going to be challenges to that visit taking place. Key most at the moment is how those nuclear inspectors actually get to the plant, whether they go via Russian-controlled areas or via Kyiv. Why is Ukraine anti them going through Russian-controlled areas?
No, first of all, because it will be the violation of the international law and breaking of the border regimes. That's why, and it is quite safe to go for them through the Ukrainian territory. The UN Secretary General just yesterday was in Ukraine, and from the Ukrainian-controlled territory to the nuclear power plant is just 5 kilometers. So if the Russian forces around the nuclear power plant will stop fighting for several minutes, you can pass 5 kilometers. It is not 100 kilometers or something like this. 2 months ago, the UN Undersecretary traveled with the proper arrangements to Mariupol when we discussed the surrender of the Azov-style defenders. It was possible to do. And the situation around Zaporizhia is less dangerous than it used to be in Mariupol. So as for now, all we need is the goodwill to stop fighting. And as we know, now we have this decision that the delegation should travel through the Ukrainian territory. For me, it was more surprised why the Russian president demanded it traveling through Russia.
So, Andrei, why is the Russian president demanding that they travel through Russian-controlled areas? Why don't they want them to go through Kyiv?
It's very simple, because if the delegation, if the inspectors will go via Ukrainian territory from Kyiv, which is logical in a certain way, so in this case, it is considered as Moscow in Moscow as a recognition of Ukrainian control over this territory, which is unacceptable for Putin.
But why is that unacceptable?
Oh, because Moscow is considering Zaporizhia as a part of controlled territories. And let's not forget that for September, there is a plan to organize a referendum in Zaporizhia area to join Russia, to be integrated into Russia.
Robert,
that's why this is political background.
OK, let's assume for a moment, Robert, that the IAEA monitors do get to the plant. You were on a monitoring mission in Iraq. I know this is a very different scenario, but in this particular case, Zaporizhia, what might these inspectors be looking for?
You need to break it down into two things. The inspectors who go are people whose job is to do inventories and audits of nuclear material. So they are entirely focused on those things. They have no experience and they have no training in safety, security, that kind of effort. Then the IAEA, from time to time, and in very few cases, has had special missions like to South Africa, to Iraq, to Libya. Those are special cases where they bring in outsiders, a lot of Americans usually, and those people come in and they are very familiar with the technology, which IAEA is not. And they carry out a mission, but it's not an inspection. So it'll very much depend on who IAEA reaches out to and brings in as experts. People who know about power lines, for example, and transformers, which is probably completely outside IAEA's capabilities.
The IAEA chief, Rafael Grossi, said himself that he might be willing to go if necessary. Would that lend a certain credibility to this mission, which is surely, as we've seen just from today's discussion, going to become extremely political?
Absolutely. Rafael has an amazing history as a lawyer in the nuclear business. He knows nuclear law inside and out. He was head of the Nuclear Suppliers Group. He would be a very good person to lead it as a professional lawyer and international law expert. I don't think he would lead any of the technical people. That's not something he would want to do.
Okay. Andre,
make one other comment?
Of course.
I think Hannah did a beautiful job of explaining that none of the accidents that she mentioned that might happen over the next few months are any more than just a regional small problem. The idea of condemning Europe is nonsense.
Okay. Andre, the UN agency visit is essentially going to be entering a war zone unless this area becomes demilitarized. This is something Russia has rejected. Is it going to reconsider that?
It's totally rejected by Moscow because the argument is very simple. If Russian troops will withdraw from the nuclear power plant, So Ukrainians can create some kind of provocation and then accuse Russia, et cetera, et cetera. That's why I'm absolutely sure that there will be no step back from Putin. He will insist to keep a power plant under Russian military control. And concerning the mission, the International Atomic Agency mission, one of the tasks of Moscow, I can say it very clearly, is to show to this mission parts of missiles and trying to convince this mission that it's Ukrainian missiles or even American HIMARS system missiles. So this is one of the political tasks for Moscow.
Okay, Robert, I can see you shaking your head there. Do you want to respond?
Well, I don't think anybody at the IAEA knows the difference between HIMARS and other kinds of missiles. That's not what they do. They all have to bring in outside experts to do that from outside the IAEA. So it's not an IAEA inspection. It would be an international mission.
Okay. Hannah, do you support, does Ukraine support the idea of demilitarizing this area? I mean, it has been active in this area. Will it withdraw troops if necessary?
Yes, Ukraine talked about the possible demilitarization for several weeks, and we were ready for these acts, understanding the danger that is happening there. And honestly, for us, it is quite an illogic in the phrase that in case this territory is demilitarized, Ukrainians will arrange a provocation. There is no sense for us in provocation because we need the energy and we need these power plants working as it supplies the energy for one-third territory of the country. And we are coming to autumn and winter, so quite a difficult seasons for in terms of energy when we will need all the capacities of this nuclear plant. So that's why for us, the demilitarization also will mean that such towns as Nikopol will not be under the serious attack, because the last 2 weeks, this town that is just across the river from Energodar, where the Zaporizhia power plant station, is under significant fire. And it is happening definitely from the Russian side. And the last 2 weeks, they are just demolishing this town. Demilitarization also will need a certain rest from these attacks for such towns.
Okay, Robert, again, I can see you shaking your head there. Do you want to respond?
I think it's very important that a nuclear power plant be guarded by somebody. The only people that the Russians can use right now to guard it is their military. And so it would be a very poor idea for the Russians to pull the military out and leave the plant totally unguarded. On the other hand, if they give it over to the Ukrainians, then they just lost their prize of war. And that's a big prize, $40 billion.
Indeed. OK, it has been an extremely interesting discussion. We will leave it there for today. I have no doubt that when the IAEA does enter Zaporizhia, we'll be revisiting this topic many times over. Thank you very much indeed, all of you, for taking the time to join us today. Andrei Fedorov, Hannah Schalest and Robert Kelly. And thank you, too, very much for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website. That's AltaZero.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.